The Good Life. Your guide to health, nutrition, fitness, and vitality.
This is Jesse Dillon. You are coast to coast, worldwide today, dialed into The Good Life, the very best in health, nutrition, lifestyle, and transformational entertainment. We were just in Los Angeles filming the LA Mastery Series with people like Bruce Lipton, Joe Dispenza, Danyon Brinkley, Dr. Eric Pearl. All of that video is being posted on our website at goodlifenetworks.com. My next guest is a very special guest. Globally revered Swami Kiryananda spent 3.5 years as a close disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda in the spiritual leader's waning years. His books are multiple award winners. The New Path, My Life with Paramahansa Yogananda, is the winner of the 2010 USA Book News Award and the Eric Hoffer 2010 Book Award. He keeps exceptional company. He's part of the Club of Budapest, which features such guests as His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, Mikhail Gorbachev, Jane Goodall, the musician Peter Gabriel, and many others. Swami Kiryananda, it's a great pleasure and honor having you on our show today.
Well, thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit about your travels and maybe a little something about yourself in your own words.
Well, my travels begin rather early. I was born in Romania at the age of 6 months. I came to America, and I guess I haven't stopped moving since. So I've been all over Europe and India and America. I'm not Romanian by birth. My folks are from Oklahoma, which is a long way, but my dad was an oil geologist, which is how I was born where I was. Nevertheless, my life was always a search for truth. And in my search for truth, I finally came upon Autobiography of a Yogi. And I took the next bus from New York to Los Angeles, and the first words I addressed to Paramahansa Yogananda were, "I want to be your disciple." I've been his disciple now for the last 62 years. I met him in 1948.
Wow.
Time ago.
And you spent, it's interesting. He was born on my wife's birthday, March 7th.
That was not when he was born. That was the day he died.
That was the day he died on my wife's birthday.
Very memorable day for me because I was there.
Interesting. Well, maybe that was the day he was born again, too. Maybe it was a Freudian slip.
He was born, actually, on January 5th.
Wow.
Yeah.
And passed away on my wife's birthday, March 7th, 1952.
Yeah.
Interesting. What was it like spending the last few years with Paramahansa Yogananda?
Well, you know, it was very interesting because he was always a very humble person, but he talked much more openly about his spiritual stature toward the end of his life. And he said that when you become one with God, you become that. So there's no difference between the soul and God, really. In fact, it's an amazing thing when you contemplate he and Jesus Christ and Buddha and all the great masters who have come down through the ages. They have not come to show us what they were. They have come to show us our own potential. And he always held up to us this reminder that we are not this ego. We are not this separate little seeming individual. We are manifestations of the infinite bliss, you have to say, that is the classic definition of God in India, Satchidananda, or ever-existing, ever-conscious, ever-new bliss.
We seem to have a model in North America, although I truly believe it's changing, but it seems to have been predicated on competition. We seem to be shot out at birth like a cannon, and media and popular signs and television and billboards, it seems to seep down or cascade into every orifice of our being that we are here to compete, to have more and be more than our next-door neighbor. Our sponsors on national television, for McDonald's to be better, it's got to be Burger King. For Coke to be better, they've got to be Pepsi. Are we moving away from that model? Because it seems to me that that's what perpetrates the ego in terms of capitalism in North America.
You know, it's an interesting thing. I have six big billboards in Los Angeles that just came up. Sort of funny to me, but in all the different billboards you see around the city, every one is trying to tell you to get involved in something. And my billboard says to get disinvolved. It says that the goal of life is bliss. So I'm happy to have that kind of message. I do think that it's essential that people get away from this competition. Actually, you find life so much more peaceful, harmonious, and happy when you don't compete. I started have started, makes it sound recent, but in fact it was over 42 years ago that I began the first of my presently eight communities, where about 1,000 people live. And our principle is helping one another, not competing with each other, supporting each other. We have communities full of people who, if somebody's in the hospital, many people go to visit, help out, do what they can. When people get married, they send them off on honeymoons. And it's just a wonderful way of life, because you find that if you have a community of 1,000 people and they're all supportive, you have 999 friends. And if they're all competing, you have 999 enemies. Mm-hmm. I was in Taormina in Switzerland, in Italy a few years ago. And I went into a shop, and I never wear a hat as a rule, but it was very hot, and I wanted something to protect my head. So I went into this shop, and since I don't know hats, I said, "Well, what kind of hat do your customers usually like?" She said, "I don't care. I don't know. I just take their money and they leave, and that's that." And I said, "There, look, here you're wasting your life. Every day you sit in this shop, and you have all these opportunities to make friends, and you just think of what you're going to get from them, and then don't even look at them." And, you know, I thought I'd never see her again. But the next year I happened to be there, and she saw me outside her shop. And she came over with tears in her eyes. And she said, "You've changed my whole life." So this is what people need to learn, that if they can learn to be friends and supportive of one another, if, for example, I go to a shop and they don't have what I want, and I ask them, "Can you tell me where I can get what I want?" And they tell me, I'll be much more likely to go back to that shop than I would if they told me, "Well, I don't care." So cooperation, friendship, support, these are the things that make human nature a beautiful thing. Competition and all the rigmarole of modern consciousness is taking people more and more toward what I believe seriously will be a huge economic depression.
So helping people without the thought of reciprocation, just because you can.
I find that I just have to begin. When I see people who come to me, I shoot them. If I see them with a dour expression, as my guru used to put it, shoot them with the buckshot of your smiles. And so, actually, I find wherever I go that I have friends, even though I've never met them before. They somehow like me, and I like them. It really works. I remember in Paris a few years ago, it happened to be my birthday, and I wanted to go to a concert in a church, but I arrived too late and they were closing the door. And I said, well, I happen to speak French, so I said to them, "It's my birthday." And they said, "Oh, in that case, come in, welcome, and happy birthday." And so they couldn't put me in the crowd. There were about 700 people in the audience, but they put me behind the altar. And they could see me, but of course, they were to me just a crowd. Well, afterwards, an old woman came up to me on the metro, the subway, and she said to me, "Do you remember me?" I said, "Well, no." She said, but I was in the concert today. And here she was, one of 700 people. How she could feel this bond of friendship with me. I had been listening to the music and feeling absolutely blissful. And I guess that communication was something that meant enough to her for her to sit down and tell me all the troubles she was having in her family. And, you know, it's so easy to make friends if you just like people. And the biggest way to like people is to realize that everybody in the world is basically seeking the same thing. Everybody wants bliss. Everybody wants the God of which everybody is an expression. And really, even the worst person somehow thinks of you as a friend if you treat him first as a friend. Don't wait for people to hold their hand out. Put your hand out. Don't wait for people to smile. Smile at them. They may feel embarrassed. They may look away. But you'll be surprised how many people do look back at you. Here in Los Angeles, I'm only here for a few months now, but I've been surprised how few people will make eye contact.
Hang on to that story, Swami. We have to take a quick break. I want to come back and talk about your experiences in Los Angeles. Swami Kiriananda is my guest today. He is considered by many to be one of the world's foremost leaders in yoga and meditation. A very special honor and a privilege to have him with us today on The Good Life.
Welcome to The Good Life, health, fitness, nutrition, and vital living. Here's your host, Jesse Dillon.
This is Jesse Dillon. You are coast to coast worldwide today listening to The Good Life, the very best in transformational entertainment. And you can find out more at goodlifenetworks.com. Globally revered Swami Kriyananda is my guest today. Spent the last few years as a close disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda in the spiritual leader's waning years, and then dedicated the rest of his life in the service of Yogananda and his teachings. He has written 140 books and has sold millions of books and audios. We'll talk a little bit about that. And, of course, his most recent book, The New Path, My Life with Paramahansa Yogananda. Swami Kriyananda is considered by many to be the world's leader in yoga and meditation. You were going to tell us a story about your recent experiences in Los Angeles.
Well, I think I said all I needed to say, which was that I find that very few people will make eye contact with you. And I just sometimes even will go up to them sitting at a table and greet them. I find that instead of being offended, people actually are grateful to you. They live lonely lives. They live lives cut off from their neighbors. And if you treat everybody as your friend, you'll be surprised how much it means to them. So you be the first to hold out your hand. You be the first to look them in the eye. You be the first to smile. And you'll be surprised how everywhere you go, people will want to help you. You put it out first and it will come back to you.
I was coming back from a meeting the other day. Actually, no, I wasn't. I was coming back from signing up to a new yoga facility not far from my office. I went for a massage recently. I do triathlons in my spare time, swim, bike, and run. I've got a sore back. I had a massage. And she said, you are one of the tightest people I've ever worked on. You need to start doing yoga. And truthfully, I could probably benefit from the meditation aspects of it. So I was coming back from signing up at a local yoga facility called Y Yoga. I passed a homeless person, or was about to pass a homeless person, and he held up a sign that had a hilarious saying on it. It made me laugh. And when he saw me laughing, he started laughing. And here are the two of us, complete strangers, and 99% of the time I would have been on my busy track and not even looked up. But just that moment of me laughing, him laughing, I immediately emptied my pocket into his jar. And it was just one of those nice things that happen in life where
that's what makes you happy. Really, why should we live a good life? Because it makes us happy. The most important reason for living a moral life is that that's the way to happiness. It's not as if some stern God were up there waiting for you to make a mistake so he could clap you into prison for the rest of your rest of eternity. God loves you, and he wants you to be happy. And the rules that are in every scripture about living a good life, etc., all of this relates to living that kind of life which will make you happier. When you're in tune with the universe is in tune with you. It's like a string instrument. If it has a good sounding board beneath it, you can fill a concert hall. With only the strings of a violin, people would probably not even hear you 20 feet away. So let the universe be your sounding board. And you can only do that if you open your heart to it. And just say, I'm a part of everything. It's all mine. And I belong to it.
Victor Chan, who's the executive director of the Dalai Lama Center, which is based here where I live in Vancouver, British Columbia, he wrote a book called The Wisdom of Forgiveness with His Holiness, and I was interviewing them a couple of years ago, and I asked them what was most important to His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, and he said one word, happiness. And if I asked you what was most important to you, Swami Kriyananda, what would you say?
I would say the same thing, except I'd refine it further and say bliss, because actually happiness is the, you might say, the human octave of a state of bliss that is eternally ours once we tune into who we really are.
And so the million-dollar question, as they say on television today, the billion-dollar question is, how do we obtain bliss? How do we take ourselves out of the busy, mind-boggling numbness that we create for ourselves by this inertia that we call success and the pursuit of success at all costs? How do we step off of that and find bliss, find happiness?
You know, it's interesting you ask that question, because I'm going to be teaching a series of classes. Of course, it won't be in British Columbia. It'll be in Los Angeles. However, it'll be the first series of classes I've given in about 40 years, which is quite a long time. I've taught many classes, but not in series. And I'm going to talk about how to find lasting success and happiness. To me, those two words are synonymous. You cannot have success if you are not happy. Howard Hughes was the richest man in the world at the time of his death, and some reporter was able to talk to him on the phone. He was very reclusive, and the reporter said, "Are you happy?" And Howard Hughes said, "No, I can't say I'm happy." The poor guy was miserable. Money didn't give him happiness. True success is learning how to live happily under all circumstances. And I find that that definitely is what I have found in life.
So in other words, the sayings that we repeat commonly, these mantras, I'll be happy when I get a new car, I'll be happy when I have more money.
That is all a delusion. And that happiness is always around the corner. And as soon as you turn that corner, it's around the next corner. You never find it through things. You never find it except by understanding that you are happy right now. Give up attachments. They're your bondage. Don't have desires. Realize that everything you need, you are already right now. There's the story of the musk deer in India, which at a certain season secretes a pouch in its navel with the odor of musk. And it runs around madly looking for that fragrance and the source of it. Sometimes it will throw itself off a high crag and kill itself in the valley below, and the hunters come and take that pouch and sell it for a very costly fragrance. But the musk deer, if only it had understood that the fragrance it sought was in its own self. This is where all our happiness can come from, and indeed our unhappiness, we want to affirm that. But we must realize that we are already everything that we could possibly want. You don't need things. You need happiness. Think more in terms of being, less in terms of doing.
Swami Kriyananda, when you look back on your life, what would you consider to be one of your most significant accomplishments?
Well, I don't think I think perhaps the answer to that is that, yes, I have accomplished a few things in life, but it's because I haven't done them. I remember one time after service in a church, somebody said to me how much she had enjoyed the talk, and I said to her, "Well, God is a doer." And she said, "Oh, really?" As if to say, "Well, I knew it was good. I didn't know it was that good." Well, that's not what I meant. I meant that everything that I do, if I feel that God is a doer, I do it better. Some people may do it much better. But I have found that for example, I've written over 400 pieces of music. But it's because I haven't written them. When I want to write a song, I simply said, "I want the song to say this, this, and this." And then I say, "Give me a melody." Suddenly it's there, instantly. And I found that the less I try to do a thing myself, the more I say, "Well, God, you tell me, you show me," the more I find I do it well. So that's why I say the secret to doing things well is not to do them at all. Let him be the doer.
I love that. The secret to doing things well is to not do them at all. I love that. I'm going to tattoo that on my forehead. I want to thank you for your time today.
Well, it's been my joy being with you.
My very special guest today is the globally revered Swami Kriyananda. Many people believe that he is the world's foremost purveyor of yoga and meditation. 400 pieces of music, 140 books, millions of copies sold. His latest book, of course, is out there for you to read, The New Path. It's an award winner. This is Jesse Dillon, your coast-to-coast and worldwide today, listening to The Good Life.